Dave's Big Dictionary. It is. This is a segment that we just started doing about 3 weeks ago. And the idea was to go through a standard classic dictionary. This is the Merriam-Webster, America's best-selling dictionary. The new edition, let's see how new it actually was, 2016. Hey, not too shabby. So it's got some new words in here. None that I made up, as far as I know. But real words, 75,000 of them, to be almost exact, because there's more than 75,000. The idea was to, now that I'm going to be 54 years old in 3 days, I've lived a bit. I haven't done a whole hell of a lot in my life, unfortunately, but we all collect our stories. We all collect our memories and our anecdotes and the things that struck us as weird or funny or scared us and stuff, or just the crazy things that have gone into our heads, or the music we've listened to, or books we've read, plays we've seen, movies we've watched, all of that just up there. And then maybe one day I'll write an autobiography if I ever get famous enough that someone will want to publish it. Or maybe I won't. Maybe this radio show is kind of my living memoir / autobiography, and you get it in dribs and drabs and bits and pieces. And that's what this is all about. This is about going into the dictionary randomly, literally like people do on a globe when you have a lot of money and you want to go somewhere in the world, and you just spin the globe and go boop, and you buy tickets, and that's where you go. Well, I'm not in a position to do that, but I can take my finger, flip randomly through a dictionary, put my finger down, and whatever comes into my tiny little brain about the word that my fingertip has picked out, I'll yak about for 5 or 10 minutes. And so, last couple of times, as I mentioned, the first word was chlorate, which was a little bit of a challenge until I realized it was a derivative of chlorine. So I talked about swimming pools or an incident I had in a swimming pool, nothing like that. And what else? And last week's was defile. Okay. So this week, I flipped later in the dictionary past the C's and the F's all the way, randomly. You watched me about 2 hours ago, randomly to the word spleen. Spleen. First of all, I love the sound of the word spleen. It's a great word. And now, if I just had my vision proper, I could tell you what the hell it means. It's a noun, of course. It's a vascular organ located near the stomach and most vertebrates that is concerned especially with filtration and storage of blood, destruction of red blood cells, and production of some of my favorite things, lymphocytes. And also, I didn't even think of it in terms of the other meaning, which means spite and malice. You know, of course, when you're full of spleen about something or feeling splenetic. So spleen is my word for today, January 20th, 2018. So I thought of two different things about it. And they're both actually good. They're both happy things. One of them has to do with my wife and me, or when my wife and I were still, I think, even in the dating phase or the early marriage phase. And we did what we still do today, which is watch a lot of television together. And sometimes we watch Cartoon Network or Adult Swim. I think this is an Adult Swim reference. Sometimes my memories aren't as clear and strong as I want them to be. But I know sort of the end of the story rather than the beginnings of it. I think we were watching a cartoon. And in the cartoon, stuff was happening, as will happen in cartoons. It was crazy and weird and zany and violent, and my wife was watching because I like cartoons. She'd rather watch other things. And there was a moment when one character fell from a great height onto another. Yeah, just went poof. And the person crushed on the bottom said, "Is that your spleen or mine?" And it was a cute line. It was funnier the first time we heard it, and in retrospect, for the moment. And it just tickled Joyce to no end. I thought it was a funny line. She thought it was just hysterical. And we ended up seeing that cartoon again and still laughed so much at that line of this horrible idea of these two poor people mashed together so badly by this accident that the person on the bottom can't honestly tell which functioning organ is his or the other person's. So that's one little spleen story. And come to think of it, and I love this about radio, it doubles back to what we were mentioning, God, on our 2 hours ago on Grilly Crimes and Old Times, where somebody left the organ donation box on a bench and his live organ there. Could have been a spleen, for all we know. So that may tie everything together. So that's one thing of spleen. Another that I am reminded of that I had forgotten about was the name of the band that I was in when I was getting out of high school and the first couple of years of college. Now, when I was first in high school, I was together with folks that I knew from junior high, and we formed a band called The Fishheads. And I wrote some songs for them, some parody songs, and I was involved in singing for them and having fun with them. They were all our group. They were our coterie of friends. And there were Stephen Fish and his fabulous fish heads, right? So this was after the Dr. Demento Barnes & Barnes song came out, so it totally fit. And we didn't do the song Fish Heads. It's just that one of the people in the band was named Stephen Fish. It made perfect sense. But then we morphed into something else, because The Fish Heads was really a parody comedy band. And we ended up meeting some other people in our high school who were more serious musicians. And we're thinking in terms of a more serious comedy band, a band very influenced by what Frank Zappa and the Mothers of Invention especially had done. My friend at that time, Scott, he was incredibly into Zappa and the Mothers. And so him being sort of the leader of the band was morphing it in that direction. And we're still writing, also writing new material and trying not to do as many parodies, trying to write zany, funny, really strange songs. We also had a crack guitarist by the name of Kevin. And so with him and a pretty decent drummer, and we had a good rhythm guitarist in our friend Jay, who was very influenced by the Grateful Dead. So we had that strain coming in, rather odd strain to put together. We weren't a jam band, though, by any stretch. We were trying to be pretty tight and funny and goofy and weird and sick, which is what I responded to. And we were looking for names of the band, and the most fun I ever had with the band, I had a lot of fun with that band, I have to say. Didn't end well, nothing does, but in certain times and rehearsals and stuff, we had a fabulous time at times making music and making each other laugh, really. And I don't think we laughed more than when we were trying to choose a name for the band. And us being a zany, loony, comedy meets hard rock, good music band, we tried to impress each other and gross each other out and make each other laugh with the names that we come up with. I mean, it was like a game of the dozens. You would try to hear somebody else's idea for a band name and then top it one more time. It was even more like that old Saturday Night Live sketch with Chevy Chase about Flucker's Jam. With a name like Flucker's, you know it has to be. And the idea was that the jam is so good that it could survive an unbelievably horrible, disgusting name. So, in the sketch, which I don't know if you can still find on YouTube, but it was on the Saturday Night Live record album that the original cast put out at one point. And they would have names for jars of jam like Mangled Baby Ducks, Death Camp, Dog Vomit, and then the one that absolutely put me on the floor. I'm sure it was Michael O'Donoghue who thought of it, but the one that just made my head explode was, here's a new jam we've just put out. It's called Painful Rectal Itch. And when you're, what must I have been? This sort of in 1976. I was maybe 12 or 13, 14 years old, and just lost control of all my functioning when the idea of a jar of jam called Painful Rectal Itch, it makes me laugh to this day. And not only that, when we were with the Fish Heads, I remember this now too, that the main band was, or The Fishheads was the core group, the songwriters and singers. So there was Scott, me, and Steven. And then we kind of had a backing band. So we weren't all one unified group. We had other musicians. We didn't hire them. They were friends who played behind us. So the idea was that there was the Fishheads and the backing group called the Painful Rectal Itch. And it was my idea. It was actually my idea to steal that from Saturday Night Live and name our backing band the PRI, Painful Rectal Itch. So that's where that came from. Then some of these same guys sitting around, the other guys being a little bit stoned, I've never tippled, and coming up with the weirdest, ridiculous, sickest names that we could, you know, Helen Keller's left testicle, I remember that was one of them that I came up with. The more gross, weird, the better. What were some of the others? Actually, the one favorite, and the one I almost wish that we had taken, was I came up with calling our band Hasidic Disco Explosion, which was ridiculously hysterical because we had nothing to do with Hasids. Half the band wasn't Jewish. It wasn't disco music. We all despised disco music. And, well, the explosion part just made it extra ridiculous. And we all fell about laughing over that one, at the audacity and ridiculousness of it. And we were going to go with it. We were going to go with Hasidic Disco Explosion until my friend Scott went on a bus and was talking to some middle-aged, older Jewish man on the bus, and he was just yakking because Scott was a very personable fellow and talked to everyone. So they're yakking, and, hey, I'm in school, I'm doing this, I'm doing that, what are you? And Scott volunteered that he was in a band, and we were making music, and we were going to play some places. And the old man said, oh, lovely, well, what's the name of your band? And Scott said, Hasidic Disco Explosion. And this old Jewish man said, oh, that's wonderful, I love it, the great music and the klezmer and the klezmatics, and I love it. And at that moment, when Scott came back with that, we knew that we couldn't actually name ourselves that because we would just get so many people coming to our concerts and within 5 minutes realizing, uh-oh, this isn't Svika Pick, right? This isn't Yaffa Yarkoni. What the hell is this? So that name was out. We didn't do the Helen Keller one. We didn't do... I almost wish we also went with one that Scott came up with called Who Peed? I came up with Who Farted, which I thought was funnier at the time. But Scott came up with one because he had this old dog that wandered around the house. And the dog was not... It was trained okay back in the day, but it lived past its sell-by date and just peed wherever. So you wander through a room and suddenly you catch a whiff of it. And it'd be, oh, who peed? And it would just be, who peed? Question mark. I love that name too. But the name we settled on was... I'll tell you how we got there. We were leaving messages on our answering machine. I think I told this story once on the air, so forgive me if you remember this one. But Scott and I had gotten an apartment in New York when we were both going to New York University. We finally broke the chains. We moved away from home. We got an apartment right on Carmine Street in Greenwich Village, and we were sharing there this little shithole apartment that's probably like $3,000 a month now. It was, I think, $600 or $800 then, of which Scott paid a little more because he had the bigger room with the window. So we're living there and setting everything up, and we get a phone answering machine. So girls, when they call, we have a place to call, not that any girls were calling me, and also a phone. My parents, his parents, they could always reach us. This was in the era before cell phones. So we get the answering machine, and then we want to leave answering machine outgoing messages to tell. And you know, we're young, we're creative, we're nutty, we're Jewish. We don't want to just say, Dave and Scott are not here, please leave your message at the tone. Da, da, da. No, we want it to be funny. We want it to be zany and goofy. And we would spend ridiculous amounts of time coming up with songs, coming up with zany characters, stuff just to leave on answering machine messages. But of course, as you get older, and by the way, we weren't freshmen. I was a senior at this point. I was in grad school, and Scott was like a junior or senior going to NYU. And we, so we were already kind of older at this and waiting for phone calls about jobs and internships and things like that. So we also had to be kind of careful later on with leaving really silly, dumb messages. Not in the beginning, but later on. So at one point, Scott was with another friend of ours. His name was Mike. I don't think I wasn't around for this. And they were going to change our answering machine message to something more normal. Okay. Well, we're a teenager, probably in our 20s at this point, but Scott is leaving a very specific, basic, you know, Dave and Scott are not home right now. Please leave your number after the beep beep, speak clearly, all that usual stuff that people still do on digital answering machines. This was still like a cassette tape. And then just to be difficult, Mike would wait until towards the very end of the message and then say something goofy to ruin it. And then Scott would have to start all over again. And he'd do this. Guys do this to each other. And among the things that Mike did when this happened, Scott got almost all the way through with the answering machine message. And at one point, Mike said, "Sheep are moist." Which was a beautiful, sick, perverted idea. But to hear it coming at the end of a message, it's like, "Please leave your name at the sound of the tone, and thank you so much. Sheep are moist." And we had to redo the answering machine message. And he said it a couple of times. They did it over and over again until finally they got a take that they could use on their answering machine. But this idea of moist sheep took hold. And it stayed in Scott and Mike's brain and filtered around and stayed with the friends of ours. And we realized, hey, that's a pretty cool idea. You know, moist sheep. It's not the easiest one to say. They don't really go that well together as words. But as a collective idea, you know, if you're thinking in terms of what animal you might want to sodomize, sheep are moist. There it is, right? So moist sheep, but even that, when you're trying to be creative and top one another, isn't enough. So for a little while, maybe about a week, it wasn't just the Moist Sheep as the name of our band, but someone threw in the word, Mike and Scott, and called us Moist Sheep Splenectomy, which was going to be, imagine that title on an album cover or a CD cover. This is post 8-track tape. Moist Sheep Splenectomy. And then we realized, first of all, nobody would be able to spell splenectomy. Anybody queuing up at a record shop, as if we ever have a record, would not even know how to pronounce the word. So we did eventually cut it down, much to my chagrin, I guess, to The Moist Sheep. And that was our name as a band for the 3 years or so that we were in existence. But I do recall that right now, that splenectomy was almost part of the band name that I was in, which comes from the word spleen, which was the word for our Dave's Big Dictionary segment, Your Spleen or Mine.